Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have stories involving countries in the Middle East. Have you been following what is happening in Yemen? Are you wondering exactly who is fighting who and for what? Bob Doty has more on the events in the area.
Some Yemenis living overseas say they are not sure what is happening back at home. This man, a high school teacher, spoke to VOA at a Yemeni restaurant in Cairo, Egypt. He says returning to Yemen would be dangerous. Yet he adds that not knowing what is happening to his family and his country is far more difficult. He says the conflict is mainly between the Houthis and Yemen's internationally recognized government. But, he says, everyone knows the situation is more complex than that. On one level, observers say Yemen is seen as a proxy war between Iran and Saudi Arabia. A proxy war is when a major power fuels a conflict in which it does not become actively involved. Both Iran and Saudi Arabia are struggling to either keep or change the balance of power in the Middle East. The Iranian government has denied providing military support to the Houthi fighters in Yemen. Peter Jenkins is a former British ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency. He says the Houthis are not exactly agents of Iran.
I think it's wrong to think of the Houthis as proxies for the Iranians. I think it's more that there is a mutual sympathy that rests in part on the Shiite brand of Islam. But they're not proxies, so they can't be controlled by Iran.
Saudi Arabia, however, is openly fighting the Houthis with airstrikes. A number of countries are supporting the raids. They include the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, Morocco, Egypt, Sudan, and even the United States. Activist Summer Nasser says, "This show of force is meant to hurt the Houthi forces, but it is also hurting the Yemeni people." She spoke to VOA from her home in southern Yemen.
Air bombardment by 10 countries is too much for this small, impoverished society. But if Houthis do dialogue, I don't even think Saudi Arabia will take it seriously, because Saudi Arabia wants to destroy Houthis as much as they can before any kind of settlement.
The Houthis are, and have long been, in firm control of territory in Yemen's north, near the Saudi border. Since their offensive began last year, the Houthis have taken the capital, Sana'a, and many of the towns and cities along the country's main road, and the road from Sana'a to the port of Aden. In southern Yemen, the battle lines become more unclear because the Houthis often are not even really Houthis. Ousted President Ali Abdullah Saleh is now allied with the group. While still in power, his government fought with the Houthis for 6 years. As a result, Yemen's armed forces is divided in its loyalties, with some fighting for Mr. Saleh and some fighting for President Abd Rabu Mansur Hadi. Other soldiers are not fighting at all, leaving the Yemeni people and tribesmen to fight off the Houthis' allies. And the unrest continues. The Houthis are a militia of Zaida Shias, a group in power for 1,000 years before the 1960s. At that time, a Republican army seized power in Yemen. Today, the Houthis remain a large minority in the mostly Sunni Muslim country. The United Nations says nearly 600 people have been killed since the airstrikes began, and hundreds have fled the country. As the violence continues, Yemeni people are increasingly on neither side. They only want the war to stop. I'm Bob Doty.
Turkish officials have strongly criticized Pope Francis for his use of the word genocide to describe the mass killing of Armenians in 1915. Turkey's government ordered its ambassador to the Vatican to return home to protest the comments of the leader of the Roman Catholic Church. Christopher Jones Cruz has more on the Turkish reaction.
Historians estimate up to 1.5 million Armenians were killed around the time of World War I. Most were living in the Ottoman Empire, which collapsed after the war. The Turkish government has repeatedly refused to use the word genocide to describe the killings. But Pope Francis used it in comments he made Sunday at the Vatican. The Pope spoke at a special service marking the 100th anniversary of the mass killing by the Ottoman rulers. Turkey was once part of the Ottoman Empire. Armenian religious leaders were among those attending the service. Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoglu condemned Pope Francis for using the word genocide.
Bu acıları tek taraflı olarak okumak.
He said it is wrong for someone with the power of the Pope to speak of these deaths in a one-sided way. The Turkish government argues that the number of Armenians reported killed in 1915 is overstated, and it says those who were killed died during a civil war. The Turkish Prime Minister accused the Pope of prejudice, making a judgment without knowing all the facts. He said he expects religious leaders to call for peace, opening up old issues for those who have an opinion that they will not change, serves no purpose. The Turkish leader warned that the Pope's comments could lead to greater hatred against Muslims living in Europe. He also said the comments were in conflict with the message Pope Francis gave during his visit to Turkey in November. The Turkish government showed its displeasure by ordering the Vatican representative to come to Turkey's foreign ministry. It then ordered its ambassador to the Vatican to return home for discussions. Observers say the Prime Minister's comments may have been influenced by politics. Turkey is preparing for general elections, and nationalists are an important part of his party. The Turkish government is in a diplomatic struggle with Armenia and the Armenian community overseas. Armenians are working to gain greater recognition of the genocide claims as part of the 100th anniversary of the killings. Turkey is seeking to block those efforts. Observers say the Pope's comments are likely to help the Armenians. More than 20 countries recognize the mass killing of Armenians in 1915 as genocide. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 has been missing for more than 13 months. The airplane, a Boeing 777, was carrying 239 people on a flight between Malaysia and China. The plane disappeared over the Indian Ocean on March 8, 2014. Months of air, sea, and underwater searches have yet to find any evidence of the aircraft. Officials involved in the investigation have been considering what to do next if nothing is found in the current area of exploration. This week, three countries announced plans to double the search area if no evidence of Flight 370 is found soon. The announcement followed a joint meeting of Malaysian, Chinese, and Australian officials in Kuala Lumpur. Malaysia's Transport Minister, Liao Tiong Lai, spoke to reporters after the talks on Thursday. He said an expanded search will start to the north of the current search area in the Indian Ocean off the western coast of Australia.
If the aircraft is not found within the current 60,000 square kilometer search area, we have collectively decided to extend the search by an additional 60,000 square kilometer within the highest probability area.
Looking for wreckage in that extended area could take a year. Since last March, crews have explored more than 60% of the current search area. The Malaysian, Chinese, and Australian officials continued to express hope that the aircraft will be found in those waters. That is where experts have said Flight 370 most likely went down. Warren Truss is Australia's Deputy Prime Minister. He says crews are using some of the best equipment in the world to look for the plane. Mr. Truss describes the underwater search area as very challenging or difficult. He notes the search area is a 5 to 6 day trip from the closest port.
The weather conditions are challenging. The remoteness of the site is challenging. The depth of the sea in the search area is challenging. The roughness of the seabed is challenging.
Two-thirds of Flight 370's passengers are Chinese nationals. Yang Chuangtong is China's transportation minister. He noted his government's desire to discover exactly what happened to the passengers and crew. In his words, "No matter the challenges that will be confronted, China will stand alongside friends Australia and Malaysia to continue the search until the aircraft is found and the mystery of this unprecedented tragedy in the aviation industry is solved." The ministers refused to answer reporters' questions about how much the additional search would cost. Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 began in Kuala Lumpur and was to have ended in Beijing. But the plane failed to follow its expected flight path and then disappeared from radar. Some observers think the aircraft may have been placed on a different flight path by its pilot. Investigators believe the plane traveled thousands of kilometers before using up all its fuel and falling into deep, distant waters. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Now, the VOA Special English Program,
American Stories. Today, we continue the story, Benito Sereno. It was written by Herman Melville. Last week, we told how African slaves on a Spanish ship rebelled in 1799. They killed most of the Spanish sailors. Only the captain, Benito Sereno, and a few others were left alive. The leader of the rebellion was a slave named Babo. He ordered Captain Sereno to sail the ship back to Senegal, the slaves' homeland. But food and water were low, so the ship stopped at an island off the coast of Chile to get the needed supplies. When it arrived, an American ship was in the harbor. The American captain, Amasa Delano, thought the Spanish ship might be in trouble. He would offer help. Babo decided to remain close to Captain Sereno and act as if he were the captain's slave. Babo would kill him if he told Captain Delano the truth about what happened. Now, here is Shep O'Neill to continue our story.
As Captain Delano came up in his whaleboat, he saw that the other ship needed scraping, tarring, and brushing. It looked old and decayed. He climbed up the side and came aboard. He was quickly surrounded by a crowd of black men. Captain Delano looked around for the man who commanded the ship. The Spanish captain stood a little way off, against the main mast. He was young-looking, richly dressed, but seemed troubled and tired with the spirit gone out of him. He looked unhappily toward his American visitor. At the Spanish captain's side stood a small black man with a rough face. Captain Delano struggled forward through the crowd, went up to the Spaniard, and greeted him. He offered to help him in any way he could. Captain Benito Sereno returned the American's greeting, politely, but without warmth. Captain Delano pushed his way back through the crowd to the gangway. He told his men to go and bring back as much water as they could, also bread, pumpkins, sugar, and a dozen of his private bottles of cider. The whaleboat pushed off. Left alone, Captain Delano again observed with fresh surprise the general disorder aboard the ship. Some of the men were fighting. There were no deck officers to discipline or control the violent ones, and everyone seemed to do as he pleased. Captain Delano could not fully understand how this could have happened. What could explain such a breakdown of order and responsibility? He asked Don Benito to give him the full story of his ship's misfortunes. Don Benito did not answer. He just kept looking at his American visitor as if he heard nothing. This angered Captain Delano, who suddenly turned away and walked forward to one of the Spanish seamen for his answer. But he had hardly gone 5 steps when Don Benito called him back. "It is now 190 days," Don Benito began, "that the ship sailed from Buenos Aires for Lima with a general cargo. Pedigree, tea, and the like, and a number of Negroes, now not more than 150, as you see, but then numbering over 300 souls. The ship was officered and well manned, with several cabin passengers, some 50 Spaniards in all. Off Cape Horn we had heavy gales. Captain Sereno coughed suddenly and almost collapsed. He fell heavily against his body servant. "His mind wanders," said Babo. "He was thinking of the disease that followed the gales, my poor, poor master." "Be patient, senor. These attacks do not last long. Master will soon be himself." Don Benito recovered, and in a broken voice continued his story. "My ship was tossed about many days in storms off Cape Horn, and then there was an outbreak of scurvy. The disease carried off many whites and blacks. Most of my surviving seamen had become so sick that they could not handle the sails well. For days and nights we could not control the ship. It was blown northwestward. The wind suddenly left us in unknown waters with oppressive hot calms. Most of our water was gone. And we suffered terribly, especially after a deadly fever broke out among us. Whole families of blacks and many Spaniards, including every officer but myself, were killed by the disease." Don Benito paused. He looked down at the black man at his side. Babo seemed satisfied. The Spanish captain saw him take his hand from the knife hidden under his shirt. Captain Delano saw nothing. His mind was filled with the terrible tale he had just heard. Now he could understand why the other captain seemed so shaken. He took Don Benito's hand and promised to give him all the help possible. He would give him a large permanent supply of water and some sails and equipment for sailing the ship. And he also promised to let Don Benito have 3 of his best seamen for temporary deck officers. In this way, the San Dominique could, without delay, start for Concepcion. There, the ship could be fixed and prepared for its voyage to Lima. Don Benito's face lighted up. He seemed excited by Captain Delano's generous offer, but Babo appeared troubled. "This excitement is bad for Master," Babo whispered, taking Don Benito's arm and with soothing words gently drawing him aside. When Don Benito returned, Captain Delano observed that his excitement was gone. Captain Delano decided to talk of other matters, but the Spanish captain showed no further interest. He answered Captain Delano's questions with sharp words, and suddenly, with an angry movement, he walked back to Babo. Captain Delano watched the two men whispering together in low voices. It made an ugly picture, which Captain Delano found so extremely unpleasant that he turned his face to the other side of the ship. Their actions made Delano suspicious of Captain Sereno. He began to wonder about him, his behavior, his coughing attacks, his weakness, his empty, wild looks. Was he really half mad, or a faker playing a part? One moment Captain Delano had the worst suspicions of Don Benito, but the next he felt guilty and ashamed of himself for having such doubts about the man. Presently, Don Benito moved back toward his guest, still supported by his servant. His pale face twitched. He seemed more nervous than usual, and there was a strange tone in his husky whisper as he spoke. "May I ask how many men you have on board, senor?" Captain Delano became uneasy, but answered, "About 25 all total." "And at present, senor, all on board?" "All on board," Captain Delano answered. "And will be tonight, senor?" At this last question, Captain Delano looked very seriously at Don Benito, who could not return the look, but dropped his eyes to the deck. Captain Delano could think of only one reason for such a question, but no, it was foolish to think that these weak and starving men could have any idea of seizing his ship. But still, he remained silent. "And will they be aboard tonight?" Again, the question from Don Benito. Captain Delano decided to answer truthfully. Some of his men had talked of going off on a fishing party about midnight, and he told Don Benito this. As he answered, Captain Delano again looked straight at Don Benito, but the Spanish captain refused to meet his eyes. Then, as before, he suddenly withdrew with his servant, and again the two men began whispering to each other in low voices. Captain Delano tried to push the worry from his mind. But what were those two strange men discussing? That will be our story next week.
You have been listening to the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. Your narrator was Shep O'Neill. We invite you to listen again next week for the final part of Benito Sereno by Herman Melville. I'm Jim Tedder.